Hello and welcome to this edition of the Adoption and Fostering podcast. This is an unusual edition. I'm having to introduce it to you because there was an audio issue with the very first episode that we did of How's Your Lockdown, Hun? I would like to apologise. It was my fault. I sound like I'm sitting in a tin can in outer space somewhere. However, what is very, very fortunate is that we had Polly Penter on in the very first episode, and Polly always makes up for any audio issues or anybody who's quiet. So for those of you that don't know, Polly was on the show a couple of years ago now. She did a conversation with Al on her experience of being adopted. And in How's Your Lockdown, Hun, we talked about the effects of the lockdowns over the last year. And Polly was very generous with her sharing her thoughts and feelings of how that went for her. And of course, how it affected her relationships with her families. So it's a great listen, it really is. I would like to apologise for the audio issues. We did sort it out afterwards. And I will never be allowed to do anything on my own again. So this is the very first episode. We hope you enjoy. Please bear with us through the audio issues. But that is a wrap to that particular series. Al and I hope to be back after the Easter break, where we might do some more Wednesday webcasts and we might do some other stuff as well. Fingers crossed. If you feel like it and you have 5 minutes or even 5 seconds, please feel free to leave us a review on your podcast platform. And if you need to get in touch with us, then contact us via email, andfpodcast@gmail.com.
We are going live. We are live. We are live. Hello and welcome to our very special new series, How's Your Lockdown, Hun? With me, Scott Catherine Rennie. And you'll notice there is no other gentleman with me tonight. Hurrah! We managed to get rid of him for a night. He's taken a night off. He's taken the next, actually, customer Wednesday off. I don't know. And the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking to adult adoptees. Or adult people, or however they refer to themselves, because we don't want to assume how they refer to themselves. And this week, I am joined by Polly Penter, who is a friend of the show, has been on before in a conversation, and very good friend of both Al and I. So welcome, Polly. Lovely to have you.
Hello, this is very exciting.
The first one as well, and the fact that you know the pun that's in around How's Your
I do. I'm very. I was. Am I allowed to say the name of the other podcast I was just telling you about? Because that was vying for the name. I have just been in a podcast called Lost in Menstruation, so I want this one to be more popular, so that if you type my name into Google, it gets higher up. Because
oh dear me.
It's a comedy podcast. I want to hasten to add.
Listen, the reason we're here tonight and the next couple of weeks, talking to adults who've been adopted. I'm just going to say adopted adults from now on, because otherwise I could be just covering
any of the above. I'm fine with any of them.
Definitely with whatever terminology you prefer. And the real reason is I thought it'd be a good idea to speak to adopted adults about how the lockdowns and how the last year has affected them in terms of kind of mental health and kind of anxieties and all that sort of stuff, as well as positives, because let's face it, there might be some positives for some people, and being able to kind of provide parents who are caring for children who may be adopted or fostered or special guardians, it might just give a little bit of insight. So that's the reason that we're doing this series, and you know, like I say, who knows, we may uncover something really amazing that, you know, nobody else has come across yet in terms of adoption. I doubt it, but you know, I've got high hopes. But asking Polly to join me for the first one was really about kind of replacing, looking for a replacement for the podcast, because we're going to get rid of Al shortly. He doesn't know it, but it's going to happen. God, he'll kill me for saying that.
I said, there'll be tweets.
He's not here. So, Polly, thank you. Really appreciate you coming on. Let's keep it the way we would normally do. Last time I saw you, we were in London. We did not have one care in the world. And then 2 weeks later, a royal shutdown.
Yeah, it was almost exactly a year ago. It must have been, it must have been exactly a year, because I work in a university, and 2 weeks after that, all of my students flew home in the middle of their course. And I was sort of dealing with phone calls from panicked parents in the US, because it sort of hit us slightly before they hit the US. So they were all calling up and saying, you know, oh, it's terrible in London. We've seen the news from London. And obviously it's been as bad, you know, give or take where they all are as well. So yeah, that was one of the last kind of social dates I had, was my several coffees with you.
So in the run-up, I guess it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I don't think anybody realised what was coming, how, you know, all that sort of stuff. And on reflection, we can say, well, you know, it's not as bad now as it was, or it's worse, or whatever. But what kind of anxieties did you have in terms of how we felt this time last year? Did you have any, or was it just, were you just like everybody else going, oh, well, you know, it's like the influenza?
I think I do remember being at work, and we'd been told to send our students back home because, you know, we were going to go into a lockdown and all of this sort of thing. And actually there was a moment that I suddenly thought, oh my God, this is a big deal. And I sat in my boss's office and cried, which I wouldn't normally do. And my lovely boss sort of went, because I suddenly thought, oh my God, this is actually happening. I somehow thought optimistically right until the last minute that we were going to somehow avoid it, or there would be sort of a brief shutdown. It'd be a couple of weeks. And even then, 2 months in or so, I remember thinking, God, this is going on. This is still going on. And now a year on, I would not have believed this time last year that it would even go on for more than a couple of months, let alone an entire year. It's really strange.
And I think that's probably what most.
I was going to say, I know that's probably stating the obvious, but I was honestly so optimistic. I was distraught when my students went home and I cried. And actually one of my colleagues, because I said, oh, I'm being so stupid. And one of my colleagues said, no, it's like a bereavement, because you've suddenly unexpectedly had to say goodbye to these people that you were just getting to know. And I adore my students. I haven't got any kids of my own. And I mean, they're not, you know, obviously, but I'm really close to my job. I joke that I'm basically their English mum, their English mom, while they're over here. And there was sort of all of that drama. And once they'd gone, I was just so sort of bereft and lost and what's going to happen next. And then we were just merrily preparing for students to come back in the summer. That didn't happen. Students to come back in the fall, as we call it, because I'm an American uni, and they didn't. And then we did think they were going to come back in spring, because everything was looking so much better. And at the end of the sort of lockdown number two, lockdown the sequel, we said, oh, yeah, look at the numbers. They're brilliant in London. Yes, you can all come over. It's going to be fine. We were all prepared. And then on New Year's Eve, we cancelled again, because suddenly there was that insane thing where the numbers went up. I think at one point where I live, they were 1,000 cases in every 100,000 or something. It was ridiculous. And, I don't know what else to say about that, really.
So, and obviously, you, as a result,
what? As in, sorry, your sound's cutting in and out. I'm not ignoring.
No, it's all right. I was just saying, as a result, you went. We all went into lockdown, but you lost your daily kind of role and. Being shut away and all that sort of stuff, and so what was your kind of initial reaction to that? I mean, you know, in terms of how you felt about it and all that kind of stuff.
I was quite depressed and I'm someone who has depression anyway, so I think I did that thing of falling into real anxiety and assuming that I would plummet downhill. And I think anyone that's got some mental health issues may have thought may have felt the same. The other thing that was really annoying that is relevant to me as a adult adoptee, adopted adult, whatever, is that I had just started for the first time in my 39 years or now 39 years having a counselling through post-adoption counselling. So for the first time ever I was having counselling from a specialist that understood adoption. And I'd had sort of three live sessions with a real human being who understood what it meant to be adopted, talking through some really major issues, because I had again, don't want to go into too much detail, but the timing was particularly bad for me because I had a massive blip at the end of 2019, like quite a serious mental health blip. And so I was just coming out of this kind of, oh, everything's looking great again, and starting to feel like I was in control of my life because I'd gone back on antidepressants. I'd done this positive thing of getting counselling that was specialist to me. I was kind of owning my issues, you know. And then that was cut short. So that was one of the things. We tried phone counselling. We did it through WhatsApp, and it kept cutting in and out, and it just wasn't the same. Yeah. And I actually never had my last session. I didn't feel that it would work anyway because I had all these other things that were worrying me. And then I kind of did the whole, I guess it's a bit like, it is a bit like bereavement. I did the whole kind of being sad, then being angry, you know, because everything had been starting to go right. I very selfishly went, this is not fair. Everything was just starting to go right. Now this bloody pandemic has happened. Damn you, science, or whatever, you know. And so that was for the first few weeks, and I didn't do very well. I'm one of these people that needs some kind of a routine, and I'm one of these people, and again, therapists and I have discussed this to death. If I'm not filling every minute of every day, if my brain is allowed to wander, it wanders to bad places often. Yeah. And, you know, there is some extent to which that could be linked to being adopted, and there's some extent that might just be me and what my personality would be like otherwise. I've no idea. But I have done this. I've been one of the people that did this thing of, I was doing Joe Wicks workouts every morning just because it got me out of bed. And it amused my family an awful lot because I've got various family members and colleagues who said, oh, yes, my four-year-old's doing that. And there was me doing bunny hops in my tiny lounge in Colindale because otherwise I wouldn't have got out of bed. So I had a few weeks of really quite major depression. And actually, but then sort of shook that off quite quickly. But I think that's because I'm one of these people that has filled lockdown to an obsessive degree with other things, doing other things, including helping a bit with that, because I haven't got any kids, but helping with the homeschooling. And I am so in awe of everybody who's been homeschooling their kids, because I sort of stole my niece. I've been doing French and English and music on Zoom with my niece. Because both her parents.
Why did I not know this is a thing?
I would have done. I put a thing on Facebook saying, because originally we were working, and then the furlough scheme came in, and obviously I got furloughed because my job involves physically looking after people who are in the country who are not in the country. So I put a thing on Facebook saying, if anyone wants help with their kids, I am not a qualified teacher, but I can help with this, this, and this. And I did get a couple of sort of, as in for free, you know, for fun. And I did get a couple of kind of, you know, I don't know what to call them, victims out of this. No, I've had three kids that I've been helping out. And so particularly the girl that I started with, my lovely, lovely niece, both her parents are working and they're both scientists. So they said, oh, please do the arty subjects with her. And it's been amazing. I just hope she doesn't fail her GCSEs now, because it would be my fault.
Yeah, it'll be your fault, wouldn't it?
It's been brilliant.
And of course, you're not single. You're not alone in all this. And, you know, was your husband a help, a hindrance? You know, did he get it? Did he understand you in terms of how you were reacting to all this? And did you understand him, actually?
I think he did. And my husband is a very, very, very British. He will hate the fact that I'm even talking about him in anywhere in public at all. This is a man who once, he sat next to me on the tube and I was chatting away to this very sweet drunk Irish guy next to me, and this guy that was sort of bantering with me. My husband texted me from the seat next to me saying, please stop. Because that's how British he is, that he couldn't break the rule and actually talk to me on the tube. But I think he may disagree, we've had quite a cozy year, because we had several months of just enforced, we have to just stop and we can't go anywhere and we can actually spend time cooking and reading and doing all these things. And I think he was quite patient at the beginning, but I think he was able to deal with it because he understood that there was a thing for me to be distressed about. Whereas one of the problems that he has often with depression, or with me being depressed, is the thing of, what do you have to be depressed about? And I'm not, he's not one of those people that says it in a, oh, come on, stiff upper lip, what do you have to be depressed about? But he wants to understand and he can't and he finds it frustrating. Whereas, oh, the entire world has entered the apocalypse. Mm. He could understand that. So he understood that my way of dealing with it was crying. You know, and being quite upset. So actually it was fine. Whereas there's been other times that I've been depressed and he hasn't really understood why, particularly around adoption, actually, because so I've struggled a lot over the past few years because of family members coming back into my life and trying to kind of get that balance and building up relationships that often are quite kind of on a bit of a knife edge, some of these relationships. And I think no one can understand unless they are adopted. His view is, but they're not your family. And of course, we've had arguments because he said, but they're not your family, meaning, but you grew up with these other people, you know, don't ever feel rejected or don't ever feel. And then I've got angry and said, well, they are my family, but you don't understand. It's always been very complicated before. So it's been quite useful having a sad thing to hang any, you know, any emotions have been. Coronavirus. It's the obvious excuse now for everything, isn't it? It's like, coronavirus. One of my colleagues was saying the other day, if I was the mayor of Prague or any other stag do destination in the world, I would just find this as an excuse to never let the British back in ever again and just go, coronavirus. So it's the go-to excuse. Anything goes, if I have an argument with my husband, if I'm crying, coronavirus.
Yeah,
I'm wondering how long we can keep using it to not meet up with those people you don't want to meet up with, because that's been a great excuse for the last year or so.
I think that's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because I think we've all struggled in our own ways, whether it's been work or social life or family or whatever. But I think that when we come out of this, it'll be interesting to see what we do blame our little foibles on.
Yes.
You know, I mean, at the minute, I'm so tired. I'm literally knackered every day. And I think a lot of that is because I'm not actually physically going out to work anymore. So I blame it on coronavirus. We're on lockdown over here still, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I think it's easy to get into that trap, isn't it? At the moment, it is affecting us in a way that we've never experienced. Well, the human race hasn't experienced it. Maybe 100 years when, you know, Spanish flu was a thing. But we don't have anybody to talk to about that.
No. And we're so lucky that we've got, you know, things like this, and my entire life is on Zoom. I do stand-up comedy as a hobby, and obviously that sort of died in every sense of the word, died for the first couple of months, and then people started tentatively doing gigs online. I've done loads of gigs online, which is very weird, because when you do a gig in real life and no one laughs, you've died on stage and you just feel bad. When you do a gig online, no one laughs because they're all on mute, and you can just assume it's because they're all on mute. It's really, really good for your ego. And just, well, they're all finding it hilarious, but they're on mute. What can you do?
So I really remember that Friday when we're doing our little practice. Nobody's reacting, so it's all good. But I think that's just as a little side thing watching programs where there's a virtual audience as well, they kind of can clapping laughter and stuff like that. It's actually very irritating as a viewer.
Yes.
And I would prefer there just not to be any. So I think you're right in what you're saying. It's probably easier actually for you.
Totally random, by the way. Sorry, this is not relevant to anything, but did you watch Staged? Because I've been watching things on TV. I don't normally watch a lot of TV. And obviously, we got Netflix right at the beginning of the pandemic and went, well, we're in this for the long haul. Let's watch The Crown, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Staged is so worth a watch if you've not watched it. It's brilliant.
My husband is watching, so he will be on Netflix now looking at that, because if you're into it, he'll be into it.
It's David Tennant, who is a beautiful human being, so you know, it's glorious and wonderful, but that's an aside, sorry.
So I'm taking that Netflix and television saw an upturn in their youth.
So yes. Well, I mean, one of the things that's come out of lockdown, which is positive, is my husband and I we've both got a million and one hobbies, you know, and I do stand up, so I'm out in the evenings. He's involved with the Scouts. We do all of this stuff. We're out volunteering, or if we come home, we grab some food and we go out again. We've really enjoyed just slobbing in front of the telly and probably drinking a little bit too much wine, definitely drinking a little bit too much wine. And we have said, when all the restrictions finally lift, can we not go back to exactly how it was before, where actually we were too busy? We saw each other in the morning when we were rushing off to work, and at night when we were knackered and grumpy. We never really saw one another when we were in a good mood, particularly. We might have been in a good mood, but we were tired. So that's been really nice. I mean, it took a while to kind of appreciate that, but that's been genuinely nice.
Yeah.
So
I think that is a really good point, actually, isn't it? For anybody through all the, whether it doesn't even relate to adoption, it's about the fact we've managed to slow down.
Mm. I think we all needed to slow down. A lot of people did. Although you say, sorry, don't mean to talk over you.
No, go on. Well, it's your interview. I was just going to say that I'm with you, but too much wine, and I'm sure my health is.
I mean, so, who are all these people? Sorry, I think there's a delay. I'm not deliberately talking over you. Awkward thing at a government press conference where they're constantly either talking over each other or Boris is going, oh, you're on mute, to whatever journalist it happens to be. But
Next slide, please. So lockdown one was quite long, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
For everybody, actually. And when I say everybody, it's really interesting today because I saw someone posted on one of my friends on Facebook, posted a screenshot from a news source. And it was saying about all these countries, and some of them are in Europe, actually, where they've got so many cases, but we don't hear about it.
Mm.
So how did the news, what was the news with you? Were you glued? Did you switch off? Did you just go, I'm not doing that? Because I don't know what my interpretation of it is for me, because I switch off. What did you do?
Do you know, I've become one of those people who is kind of obsessed with statistics, but I found it in a really dark way. And it was only after a few weeks that I thought, I was looking up going, oh, look, fewer deaths today, or oh, they've had X number of deaths in. I was doing this awful thing of looking at other countries, I don't for a minute think Britain has handled it well or anyone else, but this was around the time that Trump was slating it at lots of other countries and saying that the US was doing well, and it was only he was calling it various racist names and all of that. And I stopped myself because there was a day that I found myself going, oh, the US has had more than five times our deaths because they've got five times our population. And I thought, wow, I'm not like rejoicing in that, but I'd become just statistics obsessed. And I had to stop looking because every day I was refreshing that page on I think it's Johns Hopkins University that's been doing them, looking at comparing deaths in different countries and cases. And now I'm doing that with vaccinations, which at least feels like it's something positive. And I do have sort of a stake in it, because one of the things I've done to obsessively fill my time is to volunteer at a vaccination centre. So I'm, which has been a whole world of, I've got a whole new show out of it for next year for Camden Free.
I've seen some of your Facebook posts and some of them are cracking. The older kind of potentially sexist older gentlemen, shall we say?
Yes.
Or the lovely older gents who come in and sing your
song. I've met some amazing, gorgeous, lovely people. But I've met so many people who are so isolated and so lonely. I'm going to use this word deliberately. I sort of adopted this older man who turned up, sort of this sort of grandfatherly figure. He was a guy in his 80s, and he was dropped off by a taxi, and he's in sheltered accommodation, and they booked his appointment, booked him a taxi. It had dumped him outside the vaccination centre, and he'd come in waving his bit of paper, but they hadn't actually booked the appointment properly, because at the bottom of the bit of paper they'd printed, it said, to confirm your appointment, click here. So obviously they hadn't. So we squeezed him in, and then he didn't have his NHS number. So we were on the system looking. And then I said, what's your address? I can look you up by your address. And he said, I don't know. And we had to like rootle around his wallet to try and find where he lived. And I thought, how is somebody in this situation where they're so vulnerable that they're relying on a random stranger, volunteer stranger, to sit next to him with an iPad and literally go on Google Maps, because he knew where he lived, find the building. Oh, that's, is that where you live? Yes, that's the one. Right, this is your address. I Google it. Is that your address? Oh, yes, that's the one. It took ages. And yeah. And he, you know, he lives on his own. His family had emigrated. And so anyway, I'm sort of agreed that I will stay in touch, bless him. But I don't know, it's just... It's sort of made, I know I realized already, but there's an awful lot of people that are struggling a heck of a lot more. I've been very, very lucky. Mm. And yeah, anyway, sorry, that was a bit of an aside.
No, but... no. I mean, that's why you're here. I wanted to get a, that's why I invited you on first. You and out of the information. So when it comes to kind of, because like, as someone who has been used to traveling the world, like, you know, all that sort of stuff, I kind of, like, don't want to do anything. I want to take it carefully. And I guess my question is, the end of lockdown one came and everything started opening up and we were encouraged to go and...
Eat out to help out.
You know, let's give you all some money off and let's get everybody into a building again and let's, you know, let's do super spreading. granted, it wasn't, well, I'm sure that wasn't the intention, but you know,
well, it was the blindingly obvious result, though, wasn't it?
So, but when they started to talk about opening up and stuff, what was your feelings around that, and how did it make you feel?
We were quite tentative. We were never sort of scared because I think the age that we are, and we're both fairly healthy. I was very cautious. I moved back in with my parents when we in that little window where we were allowed to, because I hadn't seen them. I went and stayed with my parents for sort of about 3 weeks. So because I was working from home and I was only working 2 days a week, I'm now on what they call flexible furlough. So I was very cautious staying with them. I'm so glad they've now been vaccinated. My dad, thankfully, had his 80th birthday in that little window when we were between lockdowns, which meant we could go to a hotel, and we did stay in a hotel. But we were very, I think we were very aware to meet very few people. I think in the summer, we had quite a few weeks, didn't we, where we could meet people. And I know some people were like, right, I'm going to go out and I'm going to see everyone that I haven't seen, all of my friends. I probably saw 10 people or something in that. You know, I saw the girls I do my podcast with because they're my best friends in the whole world. I went and saw my parents. We had my husband's parents down. Didn't manage to see anyone else from his family because they live in Leicester, so they've just been in the eternal lockdown. I think they had about a week when they were allowed out. And I saw, you know, a handful of my friends, and that was it. And we were very overcautious, partly because I didn't want to end up in a situation where I had to isolate and couldn't go and see my parents. I think because we were aware, and I think we all knew cases would go up in the winter. I don't think we appreciated how much they would go up, but I think we knew, oh, winter and other germs around and all of that. So we were sort of cautious but sensible. You know, we weren't hiding away, but we weren't going mad either.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you about that, actually, and I should ask earlier, in terms of family, seeing family and stuff like that. I mean, you know, how especially when, like yourself, you've got two families.
Yeah. That has been the hardest thing for me. That's been really hard because that window in the summer I don't think was long enough, and I don't think we appreciated what would happen and when it would happen. So I haven't seen, so my natural mum, I got in touch with a few years ago, and it's taken quite a long time to build that relationship because she's quite a vulnerable person. And she was very much, you know, she needed quite a lot of reassurance because she felt that she'd let me down. She actually did completely the opposite. You know, I was adopted as a baby, all of this sort of stuff. We had just got to the point where she's starting to build a relationship with my parents, which is so special. I cannot tell you how gorgeous and lovely that is. So at Christmas in whatever it was, must have been 2019, she spoke to my, so yeah, before all this happened, she spoke to my dad on WhatsApp around Christmas. They had a little chat. She said, thank you for bringing my daughter up. And she said, he said, oh, we couldn't have done it without you. And they both kind of came to this kind of mutual acceptance that that all three of these, my mum, my dad and my other mum, are all important. And I've got a really, really good relationship with her. She messages me every day. We're really close. I feel bad because my first thought when all the restrictions were lifted was to race down and see my parents, who I grew up with. They're also older than my natural mum. And obviously I'm closer to them because they're the parents. They're my parents. They're the parents who brought me up. And I spent sort of 3 weeks with them. And then we were very tentative about going and seeing anyone else traveling outside of London. So she lives up in Milton Keynes. And we decided that we would go up and see her. And then the cases started to go up. So she and I said, oh, we'll just leave it a little bit. And then they whizzed up and we went, oh, arse, we should have gone to see her. It's been over a year since I saw her. I saw her in, January last year was the last time I saw her. And actually, we just started to talk to, my parents were going to go and meet her. They've never met her in person. They've only spoken to her on a screen. And we'd finally, after a long time and a really difficult, because it has been really hard. And, you know, my family sort of, my brother appeared out of the blue and they found me, and that was very hard for my parents. And it's taken a lot of sort of negotiation. And we just got to the stage where my lovely dad said, oh, I'd love to meet your mum. Could we meet her? Oh my God, yes, how wonderful. And it was all set. That is what we were going to do. At some point last year, they were going to meet my mum. And it would have been, and it's so important that the three of them, they send each other Christmas cards and birthday cards and that now. Which I don't have the words for how important that is. It's wonderful. It's how everything should be if there was such a thing as an ideal world in adoption, which there really isn't. And it's, I know I've spoken to you, sorry, I'm rambling now. I know I've spoken to your podcast about this a lot before. I feel like a lot of stuff was done wrong with my adoption and adoption in my day. The fact I was separated from my brother, the fact that I wasn't told anything, the fact they changed my name because they didn't tell my parents had a name. All of these things have finally sort of been mended, and we're now where I feel we ought to have been. And I know there are some parents of adoptees who I follow on Twitter who have young kids who have been adopted now, who do have that more of that sort of a relationship. And I think that would have been viable in my case, and that isn't how things were done in the 80s. We're finally at that stage, and here is a year in the life of these three elderly people where I'm not able to see them. And that's actually really, sorry, it's a very long-winded way of saying that's been bloody hard.
I mean, from my perspective, it sounds like an amazing outcome in some ways. And although, because I know you and I talked at length, and, you know, we've had gaps in when we talked and stuff like that, but we've talked at length, and I know how this has affected you. But the fact that the three of them wish to come together, and if it wasn't for this bloody pandemic, they might have done by now.
There's
no to be any animosity or any kind of negative feelings towards each other. It's a case of, you know, your mum, your natural mum is in a position where she didn't look after you, and your mum and dad came along and they took you and brought you up and loved you and all that sort of stuff. And there just seems, from what you said to me, there just seems that amazing connection between them, and they're not.
It's so lovely.
Yeah.
Not to, like, do you know, one of the reasons my adoption worked, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, and I don't think it would have necessarily worked otherwise, because you do get a lot of, you know, even with the best parents in the world, I think as an adoptee, it's a hell of a thing to grow up with, knowing that there was someone else. And particularly when you start learning about biology at school and all of that, and, you know, genetics, and you think, oh, and even with the best situation in the world, that has got to affect you. My dad never, ever said anything bad and would have told me off if I'd ever cast any aspersions on my mum and said anything bad about my mum. He always, and my dad's quite religious anyway. He's this sort of very sort of quiet Catholic, if that makes sense. You know, he's sort of very, and he always made the point that she was a good person and had done the best, you know, no doubt done the best she could, even though he didn't really know. And actually, that's all been borne out, because getting to know her, I mean, it was a really sad situation. I am glad that I was put up for adoption, because I think it would have just been too difficult, even with the best social workers in the world, to try and mend things as they were at the time. But now, having her in my life, and she's this very gentle, caring person, but she was in a real mess at the time. And it meant my dad was right. And actually, I know adoptive parents who've done the opposite when they haven't really known very much and said, oh, your mother's a bad person. Or I know situations where actually there's been a lot of abuse and awful things where, and that's different. But there are an awful lot of cases like mine where maybe there are bad people involved, but it's not the mother. The mother is often, very, very often, a victim herself. My mum was a victim herself. And sorry, I'm rambling. You shouldn't, and never ask me a question, you'll get a very long answer. I think my dad, it was so lovely because it meant years and years later that actually what he'd done on instinct was right. And he particularly was very keen to meet her. And having spoken to her, it was lovely. He said, oh, she reminds him a bit of his mum, which is this sort of very sweet, well-meaning, but maybe quite slightly naive, you know, I mean, I don't know. But I was desperate for them to meet. I really want them to meet because it feels like the circle has finally closed. And I wouldn't be, you know, you can't put everything down to nature or everything down to nurture. So all of the, anything I am that's good surely has come out of, to some element or other, all three of them.
Yeah, from all three of them, yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah. And yeah, so that's such a shame that had just come together before this all kicked off.
But never apologising for Waffle, because honestly, there's two streams to this. There's one about just general adoption, isn't there? And then there's the other one about how it's affected us during this lockdown, and that is...
Oh, yeah.
That's why we do what we do. In terms of family relationship and stuff, I mean, you know, you were hoping to go and see your natural mum. I mean, I guess I struggle because I live in a different country to all my family and all my in-laws, and I kind of get that. Did it panic you to think about meeting these people and stuff? Because I'm just conscious. I was very bad. I think I'm referring to myself, but I'm thinking about how I thought about it. I didn't want anyone mixing with people that they didn't know particularly well. You know, we had a bubble. We mixed with that bubble and that was it. And then anybody went out of that bubble, that was it. They were gone for 2 weeks. You know, that was it. So how did that kind of stuff affect you and hubby in terms of how you were living, or did it? Did it not even cross your mind? I mean, you know, I'm just interested.
It crossed our mind. The one real annoyance. So we formed a bubble sort of when we were allowed to. So I think in about May with a friend of ours, because we didn't need to be in one and couldn't be in one because there were two of us. But we have a friend who right before the pandemic had got a new job and a studio flat and moved in. She'd been traveling around the world. She'd come back, new job, which doesn't exist anymore, and a little studio flat, which she didn't expect to be in very much because she works in the airline industry. I know. So we formed a bubble with her, and she is somebody that I have known since my first day at school at age 4. So she is one of my dearest friends in the entire world. So actually, and she was meant to be going up to Lancashire to see her parents at Christmas. And at the last minute, she actually isolated as well for the 2 weeks before because her parents were a bit older. So we said, we're not going to meet, we're not going to go out, not even with your bubble, nothing. And then about 3 days before Christmas got cancelled. So actually she came and stayed with us for Christmas because we're one household, we're a bubble. And we had the most awesome Christmas. And we were both talking to our parents. And we were thinking, oh, we probably ought to play down what a good Christmas we're having because we were meant to be with my parents. She was meant to be with us. We can't be like, yeah, we're having a bloody great time. It's brilliant. Oh, yeah, sorry we're not there. We had such a good time. It was, I know, isn't that awful? But because it's the first time that I've spent Christmas with sort of friends rather than with family. Or actually last year we were on our own. We were in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico bobbing about on a cruise ship getting seasick.
I remember we've discussed this many times because we came back 2019 Christmas Eve from a cruise.
Oh yes, then, of course, and we were going on past like ships in the night. Literally. But Christmas was brilliant. But I think because we had her and we'd sort of made this conscious decision that we were sort of there for her from a welfare point of view, but therefore we really had to commit to this one person. We became this really quite self, what's the word? I was going to say self-satisfied. That's not the word I meant at all. what's the word I'm looking for? Self-sufficient little group. Yeah. And we were kind of enough for, you know, in terms of socializing, me and my husband were me and my husband. And then we had this extra person to break the tension and come and give us a bit of normal time every now and again. And she's Northern, so she's very blunt and very, you know. And then we did things like our other close, really close friend who actually lives nearby. It was really annoying not seeing him, but we started doing these pub quizzes on Zoom on a Wednesday night. This thing called Nick's Pub Quiz. You know the guy who does live commentary? Have you ever seen the guy that does the live commentary in Tooting, and he walks around Tooting, commentates on joggers and people carrying their shopping? Totally worth a watch. He's called Nick Heath. He's amazing. He runs a pub quiz on a Wednesday night that we've just been doing on Zoom. And I think all of us are so – we sort of live on Zoom anyway because we've both worked for American organisations. So really it was doing what we normally did, but all the time.
Yeah.
Rather than some of the time. So it wasn't too hard. I think if we'd had kids, it would have been a lot harder because, A, there'd have been more people to go out and potentially get infected, and there would also be more desire for people to go out because it's like, oh, you can have your friend. Why haven't you got your friend? We were lucky that actually our friend, she's been friends with me and my husband for a long time, whether we liked it or not. I've known her for 34 years. Yeah. But,
As well, if you don't mind me asking this, and if you do, then just tell me, shut up, because you know I would never want to offend you. Has it made you think about, like, you know, because I know that you've been very honest and told us before in the podcast that, you know, you're sadly unable to, I don't know what the right word is to use, but you're unable to have your own children, biologically have your own children. Has it made you kind of, did it take you to those places, or did you not think about it, or did you think, I wish I had children, or I'm glad I didn't have children?
It did make me appreciate the kids in my life. So my niece, who I've been teaching, one of the things I've been doing is helping her with French. She's got an older brother who'd been on two school trips the year before. She's a year younger. She was meant to be going on both the same school. She was meant to be going to Iceland and Italy, and she missed them both last year. And she was so pissed off. Anyway, we've agreed that as long as she actually works hard at her French, that Frank and I are going to take her to Paris once France opens up. We're going to take her to Paris, but because she's 15, we're going to make her bring a really posh sort of ball dress, and we're going to do one of those dinner cruises where you have to dress up, you know, and Frank has to wear a tie. And we're going to have a really posh weekend with her. And I've been doing that. I've also signed up for an organisation called the Access Project. So you're doing tutoring for a lot of it is kids in care. It's various, lots of kids, but I've specifically said I'd really like to, I'd love to have someone who's in foster care or who's within that system because I sort of understand it. My brother was in care. So I think it's more made me, I mean, it's a difficult question. I would love children, but we've got to that point where we've gone, well, we're not having them and that's fine. And I'm not going to kind of waver from that. I've always thought about adoption and I've thought about fostering, and I honestly feel like it's just too close to home. And whereas I think there would be some benefits and I would understand an adopted kid, I think I'd probably bring too much of my own baggage to it. I'm not sure I would be, whereas I am a good person at looking after other people's kids. I adore my job. I you know, if one of my students gets ill, I go to hospital with them. I got Mother's Day. I got Mother's Day cards from some of my students. You know, I think if I did have my own kids, I wouldn't feel so devoted to all of those other sort of younger people in my life that are very important to me. And I've adored looking after my niece. And I thought, you know what, I can be the cool auntie that gets to do all the fun things and then give them back. So no, the kids thing. And actually, at the beginning, I looked at some of the problems my colleagues were having with homeschooling and stuff like that. And I thought, do you know what? This would not be a good time to have kids. I really felt for some of my friends who didn't have kids. Some of them have loved it. Some of them have had a great time. Some of them have had a terrible time. Most people have been somewhere in the middle with pros and cons. But, you know, I've been able to dip in and out and help other people, which has been really nice.
and go home at the end of the day.
And stay home. Oh my God, talking about traveling. Oh, I am desperate to go travel. I have not stayed in, because I've always worked in the study abroad and international student sector. Mm. I have not gone this long without leaving the country since about 2003. I'm going mad not being able to leave.
I think the last time I was restricted like this, when I met my husband, he was clearly a proper wanted to travel the world. Mm-hmm. So that was 1998 we met. Mm-hmm. And I think 1999 was the year that all our traveling kicked off. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's like 22 years ago. And it's just, so do you, I mean, like me, do you feel like, because I'd be quite happy to go anywhere with anybody or on my own right now. Is that how you're feeling as well? But no offense to our husbands, obviously, but you know.
No, I'd go anywhere, and I really would go anywhere. And the big thing that we've got planned.
And then we'll meet at Heathrow and we'll just disappear.
We'll pick a cruise. Just go on a cruise. I have to say, we weren't some of the people who immediately booked to go to Cyprus, which I know people did, because I did have a little look on Expedia and realised that every hotel is now booked now that Cyprus says it's going to open up to British tourists. We're going to go to Paris. We're going to take my niece to Paris. That's our big trip. And then I have the geekiest, bizarrest trip planned because this is really off the wall. When I went home and stayed with my parents, and obviously they were isolating, and my mum had been told to shield for various reasons. So she literally wasn't leaving the house, that she had a pharmacist dropping off any medication she needed and stuff. So we thought, oh God, what are we going to do for the next, even though Britain was reopening, I couldn't take her out for dinner or anything like that in the summer. So she has this lovely routine where we would have dinner and then we would sit and watch MASH in the evening, because MASH is on in the evening and my mum has been watching it since the 70s. I have planned this amazing trip, I think, to the US, where I go on trains. I'm really out geeking everyone now, to every hometown of all the main characters in MASH. I really want to.
Oh, I love MASH, honestly.
MASH, can I make you jealous?
I've seen Alan Alda. I hate you already.
And he's so lovely.
I bet he is. MASH was the TV under the duvet. I've talked about this on the podcast. Right, one was Prisoner of Sabotage, was the other one. MASH was the one, because I love that humour. I'm coming with you on that trip.
Could. Are you coming and join us? You can actually go to Tony Paco's in Toledo. It's a real place. I've looked up. The only place that isn't real is Crabapple Cove, but I've found the town that it's based on, and I've got a friend who lives in Maine who says we can stay with him. So this is how geeky it's all. I've got a blog, and it's all on the blog, all planned out, and
So let's focus on something, because we do have a question which we'll ask you in a minute, and I think that'll take both of us to maybe throw some suggestions at the answer. So you do the podcast for.
Oh, I do a podcast called Lovejoy, actually.
Yeah, which is exactly what it says in the first one, doesn't it? It's Lovejoy.
It's a podcast about Lovejoy, which is slightly bizarre. Oh, that's the other thing we did in lockdown, though. We were so productive in the first lockdown, because all of the hospices were losing money because all of their shops had to close. So the hospice where the actor Dudley Sutton had died a couple of years ago, we raised a load of money and we auctioned off. We managed to get hold of some of the props from Lovejoy and various sort of bits and pieces from Lovejoy that were given to us, donated to us by some of the cast. So we interviewed one of the cast, we interviewed one of the production managers, and we did this live auction, and we raised $3,000 for the hospice, which was really cool. That was so cool.
Yeah, well done you. All three of you,
good fun. So yeah, we've been doing a lot of that, and again, we've been able to focus on it rather than going, oh, this weird hobby we've got that we've got to do, you know, on a school night. Yeah. It's been like, let's record the podcast because we're going mad.
Thoughts with you on that one, because I've done probably more for the podcast until I've started than I've done in my whole life. Oh dear me. So let's fast forward a little bit. Let's answer this question first. So I'm not sure it'll all show on the screen. So Yeah, it's a long one. You may not have an answer for this, but my adopted daughter, 9, is really struggling. I totally get it, by the way. She came at 4, having had a really hard, scary life over the years. We slowly got her to a place of feeling mostly your safe beds, mummy and daddy are always here, less than I say for you, etc. And now at 9, the world went wrong. Tell us about it. She's just old enough to understand you might die. How do I help her calm the worry? As I don't want to lie, we probably won't. But as you know, with little ones, maybe there was not enough words to the end of that. But oh wow, that's a hard one to answer, isn't it? I mean, I don't think we can answer that. But what would your thoughts be, Polly?
So is this just a sort of fear of? And 9's an awkward age, isn't it? Because you kind of know everything that's going on, but you don't understand everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. When I was a very young kid, and even now, I have a big sort of issue with like separation anxiety. I remember as a really young kid, I was fine as long as mummy was there. If I couldn't see mummy, I panicked. I remember going to my first dance class when I was 4, really enjoyed the first one because mum sat and watched. And the second one, I just cried the entire time. Because mummy had gone out shopping. I don't know if this is sort of related, but I'm sure that sort of fear, and I didn't even have, you know, I didn't have a traumatic first 4 years. I had a traumatic first 4 months, I guess, and then was adopted. Gosh, I don't really have an answer, but I think I don't know. It's really hard because
it's a really interesting one because I still, to this day, okay, I'm 44, mm-hmm. and I have a fear of death.
Yeah.
And I always have them since I think that the age of 6, mm-hmm. I had to realise that there was this thing called death when people would no longer be with us and all that sort of stuff. Now, don't ask me whether it's a fear of dying or it's not being here or it's leaving everything that we've got. And I think that, you know, There's a number of kind of things out there, isn't there? We've not just got the pandemic. We've got cancer. We've got, people who have heart conditions. We've got strokes. We've got all these sorts of things. And I guess that whilst we've seen a massive amount of illness and death through what has been a really horrid year from one particular strain of virus, I don't want to use the word flu because I feel like I'm minimising it, but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like it's a version of that. I think that if my children have managed to keep them safe, it's because I've been very open and honest with them about the fact that, you know, if you are mixing with people that you shouldn't be mixing with, and you're not in kind of, you know, so schools as an example, you know, we're all panicking really about schools, let's be honest about it. We're all worried that, you know, they're all spreading it to each other and they're coughing and spitting on each other and stuff like that, which hopefully they're not. But I think, for me, you know, I had a 13-year-old who went back to school in September, and my biggest worry was just that he was going to be spitting and coughing on people on purpose. I won't lie. And he knows that was a worry of mine, so I'm not saying anything out of school that I shouldn't. But he realised from kind of understanding bits and pieces of the news and, you know, things that we talked about, he knew why we were locked down and stuff like that. And I think that I saw a comment the other day about being honest with children about various things, including mental health, as an example, mental health thing, you know, being able to be open and honest with your child about mental health. I think actually a lot of it is a discussion that we have with our kids and being as open as possible to be able to make sure that they know when they're not with you, because let's face it, when you're with your parents, like Polly, you've just said there, you know, your mum wasn't at your rehearsals, and you'd be like freaking out. I'm not saying that your daughter should be freaking out. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that, you know, if they can be a little bit more conscious about it, then, you know, there's no worries, because maybe I don't know where it could come from in terms of the worries of that. But I think that yes, we all will leave this earth at some point. That's just what happens, sadly, as humans, isn't it? But I think when it comes to COVID, we just all need to make sure that we're being safe and follow the rules that, you know, the scientists and the medical people are telling us that. Because if we don't, then that's when it goes wrong. But I wouldn't be saying that to a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
But right then, I mean, there's you probably. I mean, I don't know.
I think all I would say is that I think it's always wrong to kind of shield. You can shield a kid too much. You can cuss it, which I'm sure this person isn't doing. And kids pick up on things. I remember, bizarrely, Chernobyl happening, and I have no concept of what was going on because I was like 6 years old. But I just remember that sort of eerie feeling and everything just being a bit like off and a bit wrong. And kids can sense, you know, it's like when they know if mummy and daddy have had an argument or whatever, you know, kids can sense that. So I think just being very honest, even if you go, do you know what, right, let's have a conversation about this and what are you scared of? And actually, yeah. I mean, again, I'm from a northern family, so there was no kind of messing about. Everything was always very head on in my family anyway. We didn't sugarcoat. I live in London now. But, you know, we didn't sugarcoat things. I think when they're older and in more normal times, because I think the pandemic is going to leave a kind of mental scar on kids particularly, because they've been pulled out of their routine way more than we have. I mean, I adapted to working from home fairly easily. Yeah. But kids have been... I think there is something to be said, and this is me speaking more as an adult adoptee in more normal times, just sort of gently pushing your boundaries all the time and just always doing a little bit, one step further, not 10 steps further, but always doing one step further than you think you can do. And my mum still sort of teases me about the fact that I always seem to, I will often do something and then think, oh God, what have I done? So I joined the National Youth Choir and I went away on my first choir course. Actually, I was desperately homesick, but the next one was bloody brilliant. And I had it was the most stunning thing I did as a teenager. It was great. And similarly, now I travel to work. I went to India on my own, you know, with work. I was a wuss as a teenager. I would have never, if somebody had said to me at 16, oh, you're going to go to India on your own and you're going to be paid to do it, I'd be like, no, I'm not. So I think with kids, pushing their boundaries gently while they're still kids and them going, oh, nothing happened then. Oh, nothing happened then. Oh, that was all right. Oh, that was all right. Or even if something, an accident does happen, like they break their arm, they're bound to break a bone at some point and the bone will get set and it'll be fine. Or no, but you know, they'll do something. They'll have to go to A&E and it'll all be all right. It'll mend. Yeah. And I think every little thing that happens, things will gradually and slowly get better. And I think you can't force them. And I'm probably stating the blindingly obvious, but I know now I'm a relatively confident person that's done a ton of things that I would never have imagined. And I wouldn't have been able to do earlier on, because if I'd traveled in my early 20s, when a load of my friends were having gap years, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Actually, I'd have, you know, booked an early flight and come home. In my late 20s. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So I think there is just an element.
I agree with you on that. I mean, you know, Fraser, our oldest, he went and did AmeriCamp, 19, and I remember being so jealous. The confidence, and you know, not necessarily our sport, because we obviously supported him, but I'm not sure if I turn around to my mum and dad said that, they'd be gone, what do you want to do that for? You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I get you on that. I'm just going to say, Lala Palmer Jenkins, I doubt we've answered your question, but maybe we've given you some ideas.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we haven't. We'll have.
No, I think we're both as useful as each other. Thanks. We need to make our children at least a little bit resilient about these things, and I think that's really important.
But it's how to do it.
I've got a 14-year-old who doesn't want to leave the house, right? Well, not actually, he does not want to leave the house. He's got no interest. If he sees people in the supermarket, when we eventually manage to get him at the supermarket, he goes round and round, and you know, he kisses 2 meters and all that sort of stuff. He's smoothed up and you know, all that sort of stuff, and I feel for all our children because it's so difficult. It is so hard for them to deal with it.
And I think that's what I mean a bit about pushing boundaries, because I'm talking about you know, life in general. And there are some parents who chuck their kids in the, it's like the thing about parents who chuck their kids in the water and say, oh, that's the only way to learn to swim. Well, I would have been terrified of water if somebody had done that to me. But, you know, it's about pushing those boundaries gently. So in the context of a pandemic, it might be, oh, you know, using the swimming analogy, outdoor swimming pools. I've become obsessed, by the way, with swimming in the Lido and Hampstead. It's unheated, and swimming in it in December was insane and wonderful and fabulous. But you know, you could take your kids to something that you know is going to be very safe, and that could be step one. And maybe next week you'll meet one person, and maybe next week you, and that's probably not what you're asking, I'm probably stating the obvious, but that's the equivalent, I guess, in a pandemic, is don't be afraid of baby steps. I think we, and I've definitely felt this with my mental health as well, that you need to look upon every tiny gain as a massive gain. Everything that you do on Tuesday that you couldn't do on Monday is a massive achievement.
And I think that is a perfect place for us to our live viewers. I mean, Polly and I are going to chat after this.
We totally are. I'm sorry, I've chatted far too much already.
just a final thought. No, seriously, it's been brilliant. It really has, because I think you've given us an insight into lots of different things, whether it's adoption related or not. And that I'm kind of pleased I had this idea. You just say that.
I'm pleased you had this idea. Very good.
What are your final thoughts in terms of the next couple of weeks and months? And what is your, I'll ask one specific question rather than asking two. So the next couple of months, we've obviously, well, the UK specifically has a roadmap to get out of lockdown and stuff. So what are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling really positive, but that said, I've been positive about every stage and I've been proved wrong constantly. My boss asked me if I was giving up optimism for Lent. I should give up optimism for Lent because it's not doing me any good at all. It's a very bad habit. No, I think now, and one of the things I've been doing is sort of smugly looking at the vaccination numbers every day, just because I feel I have some vague input into that. And they are looking really positive. So I'm feeling fairly optimistic about, because things were okay last summer, so they're bound to be better, not worse, this summer, now that we've got the vaccinations as well. So I'm feeling cautiously optimistic. And I'm looking forward to going to Paris.
I was going to say, I'm pleased that you are feeling optimistic, and it's really good to hear from you, really, because, you know, we know each other, I mean, not well, but we know each other, and, you know, I like to think that my friends are doing well, and if they're not, that they could contact me. So it's been an absolute blast talking to you tonight.
Oh, it's always a blast to talk to you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And we did it with our uncles as well. I got to ask all the things I wanted to ask.
He's not tweeted. I'm looking at my Twitter. He's not tweeted.
Oh,
I know. I thought he'd be trolling me.
Yeah. Polly, thank you so much. I know you're going to be on here again at some point, whether it's in 6 months or 6 years, it doesn't matter. You're always welcome. Thanks for taking part tonight in this week's How's Your Lockdown Hun? And I'll be back next Wednesday. Same time, same place, but not with Polly, with somebody else. But you'll see that soon. I've got them all lined up, I promise. I am being professional, I'm being organised. I'm just not announcing it right now. I'm announcing it next Wednesday. Bye-bye. Bye.